Hello. I'm TJ Reagan. I'm from the Atlanta Speech School in Atlanta, Georgia. I am a speech language pathologist, and right now I'm working as a facilitator, which is pretty much just a language and literacy coach for the Rollins Center for Language and Literacy at the Atlanta Speech School. So the Atlanta Speech School is a private school, and it started out as a school for children who are deaf and hard of hearing. But it's developed, it's been around for 75 years, and now we have a professional development wing, and that's what I do. So I provide professional development and coaching services for teachers all across the state of Georgia. So I'm just going to tell you about the last 2 years of my work. So the reason I'm here is that in 2009, the Frank-Porter-Graham Institute released findings of an assessment they had done about Georgia's quality of infant, toddler, and three-year-old preschool classrooms, and their results were pretty hideous, actually. So what they found was that the majority of infant, toddler child care was of low quality in Georgia, and let me see if I can show you this. And 80% of Georgia's preschool classrooms had less than basic practices supporting language and literacy for Georgia's earliest learners. So we were obviously not doing a very good job of preparing our children for school. And so then in 2010, Georgia joined the Grade Level Reading Campaign, and lots of these amazing agencies in Georgia came together to work towards the 2020 mission of having all of our children ready to learn when they entered kindergarten, and on a path to read to learn by the time they were in third grade. And specifically, the speech school, that's me, and the Drew Charter School and the YMCA, in 2011, we joined forces to open a demonstration site, Birth to Three Preschool, in a very needy area in Atlanta called the East Lake Community. And what we did was we said, we are going to show that this can really work, that we can create high-quality learning for young children without, you know, significant costs, without huge changes to what's going on. We just need to focus on language, and that will really make things work. So I was hired as the coach for this demonstration site, and once we had the strategies down in that setting, we translated them and spread the word across the whole state of Georgia. So the methods, we had six classrooms, one infant classroom, one one-year-old classroom, 2 2-year-old classrooms, and 2 3-year-old classrooms. And I coached the teachers in this small little childcare setting in the East Lake community. And I coached not only the lead teachers, but also teaching assistants. And also I coached the administrators there, not only the director, but also the director of operations, and actually encouraged substitutes to come to any trainings I had too, because substitutes are a big part of the culture. So I provided the first, so this has been over a span of about 2 years. The first year I provided monthly PD sessions for the teachers. We got a grant from the United Way where we could have sub-coverage, so I could bring the teachers in once a month to have trainings with me on language development and some pre-literacy practices. And we were lucky enough that we could do that once a month the first year. The second year, I did trainings about once a quarter. And then also the first year, once a week I met with teachers to help them plan their lessons for the coming week. And the second year I met with them about once a month to plan lessons for the upcoming units that they were going to work on. I used a research-based coaching process for my teachers, so I started with observation, helped them reflect on what we had seen, let them come up with a plan of how they wanted to progress, put that into action, and then kept on going, did that work, and tried to really focus them on the intentionality around language. And so here's the content I trained the teachers on. I tried to make it very simple, something they could remember. The first thing I told them is, if you're not pushing in language or you're not pulling out language, then you're just babysitting. And that really seemed to resonate. Actually, they started having this really a view of themselves as a teacher, even infant, toddler teachers. They said, you know, I'm not just babysitting. I'm building a foundation for these children's learning. And I think that's when I got buy-in, was when they really realized, this is a profession. This is not just some job I'm doing. I'm really changing the world here. So pushing in language just means modeling language, using nice long sentences, using vocabulary that's rich. And pulling language means getting children to use that language and those longer sentences themselves. These are my next two strategies that we developed. I worked really diligently with my mentor, Ann Van Cleek, who I had done research with when I was in grad school, to come up with something that was going to be easy for teachers to remember, but also that was research-based and that we could expand upon over a period of 2 years. So it's got a lot of information, but we tried to make it start simple. So there are two main strategies. We told teachers, we want you to talk more and we want you to read more. And we came up with some nice acronyms for talk. The first acronym talk is tune in for the T. So tune in, follow the child's lead, talk about what they're looking at or engaging in. The A in talk was ask questions. So ask open-ended questions, you know, get your child involved with you. The L in talk was lift language, which just means add vocabulary, add concepts, add longer sentences. And then the K in talk was keep it going. So strive for five, like David Dickinson says. And really encourage children to talk with you. So that was our talk strategy, which we started with our teachers. And the next strategy was called read. And read starts with R, repeat the book. We wanted teachers to pretty much just choose one book to read each week and read it every morning with their infants through two-year-olds. And with three-year-olds, they get a little more bored. So we said, choose three books over a period of 2 weeks. And just read it at least each book at least three times with your children. The first time, focus on events. Make sure the children understand the story. The second time, focus on emotions so the children get some extra vocabulary there. And the last time, have the children tell the story back to you. So you can see how we make it more and more interactive. And the goal was that by the end, the children are the storytellers. That's been a fabulous way. Teachers love to be able to plan their lessons based all on one storybook for a whole week. So it's been a nice thing to implement. The E part of read was engage and enjoy, so make it fun. If you're reading books with children, use funny voices, pull in some actions, you know. If you say, then the bird flew away, say, can you fly away? And make the children do those things. And that was a really effective strategy for helping teachers focus on vocabulary as well. The A in read was ask questions. Again, open-ended questions are great. And not only ask questions, but scaffold for children if they're having a hard time answering your questions. And the D in read was do more with the book. So tie the book to other parts of your classroom day, from small groups to center time to outside time, so that you can provide multiple exposures to vocabulary targets and concepts from the book. So these two strategies are nice and simple. They're easy to remember. We made up songs and gestures to go with them so teachers would really be able to remember them. And one of our gestures was tune in. And if I was in a room coaching, I wouldn't have to interrupt the lesson and tell the teacher, tune in to what Jimmy's doing. I could just go like this and go. And she would remember, oh, yeah, I need to tune in. So it was really a nice strategy. And the way I used Lena was to just measure our teachers doing what we asked them to do. So the first thing I would do is I would collect, we collected 42 samples over the span of the 2 years. So not a ton, but a little bit. And the first thing I would do is look at peaks. So peaks in adult word counts, peaks in conversational terms. This shows the peaks in adult word counts. But I would look at it and say, the very next day when I gave feedback to the teachers, you had a peak yesterday, and it was during a book read, or you had a peak during diapering time. That was really fabulous. And so what I've done now is, based on all of the peaks that we identified, looked at what percentage is in what type of activity throughout the day. And you can see book reads, 42% of our peaks were during book read times. 11% of peaks were during diapering or potty time. So I did encourage my teachers to be diapering sportscasters, and they really use potty time and diapering time as a language-rich activity. Meals and snacks were also a peak several times. Pack time is a time for pre-literacy activities. It's phonological awareness, alphabet knowledge, and concepts of print activities. It's a special time of day that is lots of finger plays, nursery rhymes, rhyming books, music, stuff like that. And then small groups has also turned out to be a peak. So that was nice to be able to give teachers very functional feedback about, do again what you did during small groups yesterday. That was fabulous. Instead of just saying talk more, which is kind of nebulous, the more specific I was about actually tying it to a part of their day or a routine in their day, the more likely they were to do that again. And then I looked at, using Lena, the mean adult word count. This is for all of the samples that we had. And the red there is the 50th percentile for partial day norms that the Lena folks gave us. The blue there are my teachers that I was coaching. And you can see in the very middle we have at 12 and 1 o'clock. That's a nap time for most of the classrooms. I didn't pull that out. I just let it be. And you can see it's Maybe at home with their parents, kids don't nap at that time. I don't know. I let my child nap. But anyway, you can see that most of the time our teachers really did a nice job of either meeting or exceeding that 50th percentile. So that was exciting. Then I wanted to see, were our teachers able to maintain this? So in this chart, the year one is the blue and year two is the red. And so this is just adult word count. I think our count stayed pretty similar. Again, that time is very obvious there in the middle. So I didn't do any statistical analysis of this, but I think it looks like pretty nice maintenance. And we're still taking data now, so we'll see how that pans out. And then I also looked at conversational turns. And I'm sorry this is so tiny, but you can see this is the infants, this is the ones, twos, and threes. So our infants, classroom, they are superstars. They are constantly getting back and forth interactions with our babies all throughout the day. Our ones classroom, they did a nice job. In the mornings, they have interactive book reading sessions, so that you can see that was a peak. And after the nap time, they have another book reading session, so you can see that was another peak. Our twos, not as exciting. So that's something that I've really identified as a focus of our coaching. So there are certain times where they're more interactive, but definitely we can see some improvement there. And then our three-year-olds, you can see after the nap time, they're the one that circled. That was their small group time. So small groups was a fabulous time. One thing I'm not sure about though is if maybe in our older classrooms it's a lot louder. There's a lot more busyness going on. So I'm not sure if some of our conversational turns got caught in overlap. That's something that I would love to investigate if I had more time. So we did identify some bright spots. Specifically, small group time is a fantastic time for language and conversational turns. So that was exciting. And then we wanted to look at how did this affect, so the changes in our teachers' behavior, how did it affect the classroom quality? And when you're looking at classroom quality for infants, we did the ITERS, which is just a measure of the environmental quality. So you can see that language and talking and interaction. The green bar there is the state average of Georgia, which we knew was awful. We were sure we were going to beat that, but we actually did. Hooray. So we beat it, and we even made progress throughout the year. So this is exciting. And we didn't have a baseline performance. I trained the teachers before they even began with children. So we started out high, I think, because they were on board. They were fired up. I would love to start at another school and measure them before I go ahead and jump in and train them and see how we make changes. But anyway, for our two-year-old classrooms, you can also see in some of the areas we started out lower than the state average. And I think that was a function of we had a lot of brand new teachers that had never taught infants and toddlers and twos before. But then by the end of the school year, you can see that we did beat the state average on all of those measures, especially language and reasoning and interaction, which I think are important. And then in the three-year-old classes, we measured classroom quality with the class. And we specifically looked at instructional support because Pianta says if we can get our instructional support measures in the classroom above a 3, we'll really see a change in outcomes for our young children. And so that was our goal. We wanted to get our teachers to a 3. And you can see at the beginning of the year we weren't there. But by the end of the year we did just barely eke out a 3. And we're hoping that this year we'll see some more progress. These are from year one. But you can see in language and modeling, the one to the farthest on the right, we started out below the national average, which is that green bar, and not until the end of the year did we jump up. So I'm glad we did. But we also looked at how our children made progress. So we wanted to see, did we affect their vocabulary skills? Did we affect their language skills? So we measured receptive vocabulary using the PPVT. The national average, or the average score would be, a typical score would be 100. Our kids in our three-year-old classroom started out high. They started at about 109 as the average, and then jumped up a little bit. And then our twos started out a little more average and jumped up quite a bit. So that was exciting. Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that about 50% of the children in this population are from homes that are in poverty and homes where maternal and paternal education are very low. And so I haven't pulled out or teased apart how SES affects this, but I'm hopeful that we can do that in the future. And then also we measured our infants and ones vocabulary, their vocabulary, to see if we had made change with that. And this was expressive vocabulary. And we did see some nice gains throughout the year. And the last assessment we did was of children's discourse skills using the preschool language assessment instrument, which is a test of how well children can think with language and answer questions at various levels of difficulty. And you can see at the beginning of the year, 12% of our kids were below level in the three-year-old classroom. By the end of the year, everyone in our three-year-old classes were either on level or above level. And I think that's because we encourage those asking questions all the time and thinking through stories very well. So we were excited about that. So thank you so much.